This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, I want to start off today's show with my thoughts on what has transpired most recently in Gaza, which is the killing of 7 aid workers from the World Central Kitchen, Jose Andreas's global humanitarian food organization that has been aiding areas of conflict, areas that have been destroyed from hurricanes and tornadoes and the like. And, you know, today Jonathan is back on the show, and I ask him towards the end of our interview about his thoughts, and we're going to have a longer conversation about it next week. But, you know, I ended my interview with Jonathan by saying that we always find ourselves looking for a tipping point moment, looking for a moment where people really see what is happening, right? And that decisions are made based on the vileness, right? Like, one of the reasons during the height of the civil rights movement to video and to put on television the brutality that surrounded segregation and the Jim Crow era, those images began to change people's hearts and minds. You know, when you're seeing children be brutalized, people be brutalized with fire hoses and the pressure and the beatings and the humiliation and the degradation and all of those things, it began to change the course of history. Similarly, I wonder what will happen following the purposeful killing, because what we know and what Jose Andreas said recently in his op-ed that if you have not read, I encourage you all to read, Let People Eat, because it is heartbreaking and honest about food being used as a weapon, right? And I think that the world has had enough of giving Netanyahu and the IDF the benefit of the doubt. 32,000 plus people are dead, more than half of them being children. People are being starved to death, medicine being denied. And now this is one in a series of aid workers who have been killed. And Netanyahu's response is just so fucking depraved when he says, well, you know, that's what happens in war. No, actually, that isn't what happens in war, because there are rules of engagement for a fucking reason. Absolutely, war is heinous. But as I listened to an analyst recently on cable news say, but we're not supposed to be dealing with a dictator or a head of a terrorist organization. This is the president of a supposed democracy where you are supposed to follow rules and regulations about how you engage. But that's not what's happening. So why do we keep giving this motherfucker the benefit of the doubt when we know that his heart is calloused, as is the hearts of the people that are inside of that Knesset? So when you start to see, as they don't show on regular news, thousands of people emptying into the streets in Israel demanding his fucking resignation, because they don't want this. Because what he is doing is honestly shifting the world's view on this country. And that's never a good thing. You know, what José Andrés says towards the end of his Let People Eat op-ed in the New York Times is this, that really just got me. The peoples of the Mediterranean and Middle East, regardless of ethnicity and religion, share a culture that values food as a powerful statement of humanity and hospitality, of our shared hope for a better tomorrow. There's a reason at this special time of year, Christians make Easter eggs, Muslims eat an egg at iftar dinners, and an egg sits on the Seder plate. This symbol of life and hope reborn in spring extends across religions and cultures. I have been a stranger at Seder dinners. I have heard the ancient Passover stories about being a stranger in the land of Egypt. The commandment to remember, with a feast before you, that the children of Israel were once slaves. It is not a sign of weakness to feed strangers. It is a sign of strength. The people of Israel need to remember at this darkest hour what strength truly looks like. I leave that with you all today because I think in this moment of great darkness that we are all experiencing in this country, in Gaza, in Israel, in the Congo, in Ukraine, around the world, in the nations that we don't lift up to a spotlight, that we are being fed a false image, an idea of what strength and power looks like. And because people find themselves so desperate, they are consuming it, knowing that it will never fill them. When it is darkest, we must choose the light and be the light. Coming up next, my conversation with our friend, our in-house doctor, Dr. Jonathan Metzl.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Folks, I am so excited to welcome back our world traveler, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, who has been on the road selling his new book and having a conversation, starting conversations about What We've Become, his new book, which is out now. If you guys have not gotten it yet, you need to get this book and be in conversation. Jonathan, welcome back. Tell us how the tour has been, because you're out there talking to real Americans, not like me, because, you know, according to corporate media, I'm not a real American, but you're out there talking to real Americans. So what have you been hearing?
Well, it's been honestly incredible and powerful. As you know, because we have been talking about this for a long time, and also in our great conversation in Brooklyn, you know, this isn't the kind of book that, like, you can summarize in 3 sentences. And so it's been really great to get out there and talk about issues of race and gun violence and mental illness and democracy, which are all the themes that the book kind of revolves around. And I've just been honored and privileged to go to really to be led into some incredible conversations. I was in Pittsburgh yesterday, and we had a morning kind of roundtable with gun violence prevention groups from across Pittsburgh. People were there who were working with people who were, it was really interesting, working with in gun violence prevention in Pittsburgh, working with people who had just been incarcerated and were just getting kind of let out. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that, like, people were going into prison thinking that, like, the gun situation was one thing. And then when they come out 10 years later, it's just so much worse than when they went in, because there are so many more guns and the pandemic upended everything. And there's so much more polarization. And so really talking to people on the ground about this stuff, about what it means, it's just, you know, it's the honor of writing a book like this. And so I'm doing that. I'll be in Louisville next week and Seattle and a couple of other stops. So really, I mean, to me, that's the great part of spending 5 or 6 years working on a project, is then you get to actually talk about what it means in the real world.
Yeah. And I love that. And I think that what an interesting perspective to be talking to people that were formerly incarcerated and their experience going in with the world being one way and coming out with it being a completely other way. I'm sure there are so many different perspectives that are of value. And I think, you know, unfortunately, in this country, we're just going to continue talking about guns because they don't ever seem to be going anywhere. And the problem seems to continue to get worse. And, you know, I'm from Long Island, New York, and where I have grown up, I've told you, out east on Long Island in Suffolk County, has become incredibly red. It was not incredibly red when I was growing up. And, you know, I see more pickup trucks and gun paraphernalia on the back of it than I ever did my entire life of growing up. And so there is this sense of fear that I have in certain areas that I didn't before, like, and that's coming as being, you know, a Black woman going to a school that was, you know, and living in neighborhoods that were like 96 and 97% white. But it is this greater relationship, I guess, Jonathan, is the question. There seems to be a deeper relationship almost that is being forged between people and their guns, particularly the new groups of people who are not, quote unquote, traditional gun owners that now see, well, if everybody else has one, I need to have one too.
No, it's a conscious market. I mean, that was one of the talks I gave in Pittsburgh yesterday. I gave a couple talks. But one was just about the way that market is created and fostered by using fear. For example, after the murder of George Floyd, Black and Latino Americans were specifically targeted by gun advertisers, basically saying the cops are going to, you need a gun or you're going to end up like George Floyd or something like that. After October 7th, Jewish Americans were targeted saying the world is going to turn on you and you need to be armed. And so basically it's this politics of fear that then puts guns into that place. What I heard from some of these like people who were working with, what's the word for people who were incarcerated and then just got out, newly unincarcerated? I'm not quite sure. I want to get it right.
I want to get it right too. Let me Google it.
Yeah. But what they were saying was that when they went in prison, like you actually had to work to get a gun, and now a 10-year-old can get a gun. And so just the idea of just kind of how many more guns, and a lot of the people who were the violence prevention people also told me that all the rules went out the window during the pandemic, which was like when they started seeing many more things. And so in a way, they become like your form of self-protection when the world's going to shit. And it's hard because, as I've been saying for like months here, then the argument of let's all put our name in a government database and trust each other and common sense public health is just not a convincing argument for people. And so I do worry that like Trump is really speaking to this fear and Biden isn't. Like Trump is saying like everybody needs a gun because the world is terrifying and I'm creating the terror.
Returning citizen.
Returning. Thank you. That's right. Thank you. But so that's part of it. But then the other bullshit part of this, honestly, I just keep thinking because I want to write a new op-ed and I can't figure out how to start it. But like the whole gun logic right now is like the good guys need guns because the bad guys have guns or something like that.
I feel like that has been the logic, right?
But like the crazy thing is how the good guy gun market is creating the bad guy gun market. Like the issue that people aren't thinking about is how like those two things. And so we've known for a long time, there's this thing called the iron pipeline where like states with tight gun regulations, people who are going to commit crimes, they just go to red states and buy their guns and come back. So because anybody can buy a gun in a lot of these states. There's this whole funnel of like guns that started out as quote unquote legal guns that then become illegal guns. And the other thing, of course, is like many mass shooters are legal gun owners. But the thing is like Republicans now use this thing of like crime. They're trying to like hang this around the neck of the Democrats as if like crime is something that's all about policing. But really the gun market is creating so much crime. And it's just like crazy because they're creating the problem that then they, I mean, the Democrats, as you know from my book, are more than to blame for a lot of this stuff. But in this particular issue, I'll give an example. Yesterday in Tennessee, there was a bill passed by a great Democratic legislator that was trying to ban what are called straw purchases, which is like the most obvious thing in the world. People go buy guns at a gun show. They come outside and then they just give them or sell them to people who are not allowed to have guns. And there's a lot of data that shows that these straw purchases, those guns then lead to a lot of crimes. So the Democrats tried to like regulate straw purchases, which we do like in Alabama and Florida and every blue state. And the Republicans here blocked it. So they're literally like blocking the bills that are going to then allow guns to then become quote unquote illegal guns. And so this whole idea of like the legal versus illegal gun is just to me, it's, I don't want to say it's a red herring, but it's like a problem that the Republicans are creating and then trying to have the Democrats own it by then saying you're loose on crime.
I don't even think, so I'll go one step further, because I don't even think that the entire strategy is wrapped around creating a problem that then you want Democrats to own. I think that Republicans are purposefully creating a problem that then will create the pathway for an authoritarian.
Exactly.
So if you, so it isn't, so I don't even think that it's just like, oh, well, then we want to make this Joe Biden's problem. It's like, no, you create the conditions, you create the hellscape, and then you say, oh, but I have this solution. And the solution happens to be this one man that is going to make all of your nightmares, you know, into fairy tales, right? Like, that's what it is that they're, you know, that they're creating, because it's obscene, right? Like, if you are supposedly about law and order, and you're saying, oh, well, only people that have, you know, the legal ability to have guns should have access to guns, then why wouldn't you go ahead and vote for a measure that makes it difficult for people who are not supposed to have guns? Because you don't actually care who has a gun, because you think everyone should have a gun, right? And then you'll create the conditions that escalate violence that then get people into a whipped up frenzy of fear that then they believe that this one person can come in and save them.
And also it creates these hierarchies that, because everything is monetized, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at this Trump social nonsense, true social nonsense, every single thing is monetized. So it's also like what I write about in What We've Become is how first you scare Black Americans into buying guns, then you use the representation of Black Americans with guns to then sell more guns to white Americans. And so it becomes this vicious cycle where the people who are supporting that fascist dictator are also gaining monetarily by like pitting each other against each other tribally and all these ways. So it becomes this manipulation that then creates almost like a classic arms race, you know, where the yep. gun seller is selling guns to both sides. And so
ooh,
me,
call it that, Jonathan.
What's that?
Your piece that you're mulling around in your head. Use arms race in there somehow.
Well, you know, yeah, the American arms race, actually, because I'm still, you know, I'm still mad they didn't let me call the book How We Lost. I'm still like mad about that every day. It was such a better title for the book, but they told me like nobody's going to buy a book about losing. But it's really like we, our strategies don't respond to like the manipulation that's happening. We're being, what was that? You know, these fake stocks, like we're all just being manipulated by these algorithms, right? Into, you know, that's like this Trump, this Truth Social is like a perfect metaphor for the way the gun economy works also, which is they scare the shit out of people to raise the stocks and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, the other day was circulating on social media, and it's an interview that Toni Morrison gave. And I think the question from the journalist that was interviewing her was something to the effect of, do you think that racism will ever end? And she said, and I'm not quoting directly, but she responded with, when racism will end, when it's no longer useful for white people. And I thought that that was just, and I've heard it before, but it's like every time that you hear that clip and then the response from, you know, was a white journalist was, you know, well, what do you mean? And she's like, when it's no longer useful for you, you will stop using it. Like, plain and simple. And so I think that for Republicans, in a lot of ways, it's, you know, that question around white fear, right? Because it's not white rage. It's also white coupled with white fear. They will stop using it when it's no longer, when fear is no longer their number one marketing tool for white America.
Oh man, this is a scary moment.
It is. I mean, it is, you know, because it's scary. And at the same time, Jonathan, don't you feel like while it is scary and I have definite days and hours and I talk about it, you know, with you and with other folks that join the show, that we know more now.
Oh, yeah.
Right? No. It's like we're at a time when we have so much information at our fingertips. And I think that that is also part of what fuels the fear. But it's also just like we know more about people, how people think, how people act, right? How easily people are manipulated. And so you think that the good people would be able to use that information the same way that the bad do. But I just don't ever think that that is the case.
I mean, if that was the case, people wouldn't have put their life savings in the Truth Social stock, for example, knowing...
I mean, who did that besides Donald
yeah,
Trump?
No, I know.
who put their life savings other than Donald Trump into Truth Social?
I'm saying, like, past behavior is a sign of future behavior. No, I was kind of making a joke there. But I will say, you know, I'm thinking of the Jason Stanley book about how the one of the most important factors for the rise of fascism is a divided opposition. And so the question is not just are we smarter, but can we not be divided, which I know is what you're working on so much right now, that in a way I feel like we know more, but also the forces that are dividing us are far more effective and nuanced. And, you know, the fact that Elon Musk owns Twitter and that they're going to do some funny stuff to TikTok, like the way we know more, but also the forces we're against that are trying to divide us to create this dystopia are also far more advanced. And so in a way, we have to up our game in so many ways.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
The big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I want to, with the couple of minutes that we have left, I want to switch topics to where we find ourselves in the Israel-Hamas war. And, you know, as we came to tape this today, there is more news coming out around the killing of the 7 humanitarians working with the World Central Kitchen, Jose Andreas's global humanitarian food operation that has served millions, tens of millions of people. And he has an op-ed, I know that you didn't get an opportunity to read it yet, that is in the New York Times. And really, it's talking about the ways in which food should not be used as a weapon, right? That, you know, he stated, and I just want to give you this like piece. He said, quote, "Their work was based on the simple belief that food is a universal human right. It is not conditional on being good or bad, rich or poor, left or right. We do not ask what religion you belong to. We just ask, how many meals do you need?" And he says this towards the end, which is that Israelis, in their heart of hearts, know that food is not a weapon of war. Israel is better than the way this war is being waged. It is better than blocking food and medicine to civilians. It is better than killing aid workers who had coordinated their movements with the Israeli defense forces. What I just want to get your reactions to this, again, in a long line of 32,000 plus Palestinians being killed, you know, aid workers, humanitarian workers who are doing their best to stop a Netanyahu created famine. What are your thoughts on where we find ourselves right now?
Well, I think we need a whole show on this, honestly. I mean, a whole segment, because it's the fury right now, the outrage from, I actually think Biden for the first time really expressed like real fury. I think that the critiques of the Israeli military, of the approach right now, that kind of became symbolized by what happened, and also just honestly that is Netanyahu's quite smug response in a way that clearly didn't grasp this. And so, you know, as you know, I mean, this is a much longer conversation. Like I've been working in this part of the world for a long time. I refuse to believe that Netanyahu is a metonym of Israel. You know what I mean? Like, I know so many mm-hmm. people in Israel who are mortified about all of this, who didn't want, even after October 7th, the invasion to happen in the first place. They said, like, there's no winning for us other than mobilizing the world in a diplomatic way, a more targeted way, that there's no good answer to, like, penalizing the entire population. Mm-hmm. But then I also know that there are all these bigger geopolitical forces, right? That, you know, Iran is, I mean, there's so many other forces at play here. So I guess the question right now is, what will the killing of these seven humanitarian workers, what will it come to symbolize in the coming weeks and months and years? Mm-hmm. In other words, mm-hmm. is this the moment? Because it's also the same week where, you know, there was a attack on the Iranian embassy and things like that. Is this the beginning of a larger expansion of the war? I don't mean just this attack. I mean, just more broadly. Right. So I guess the question for me is, like, this volatile moment right now. I mean, as I've said all along, my position is I think we should be working also with the Israeli left, who've been trying to topple Netanyahu for quite some time. And I don't even get me started about this. Like, this is the Pol Pot, as I said, the first week of our era, in a way. And so just straight up, of course, it's unconscionable. But I also think that we're at a really dangerous moment right now.
Yeah.
Because I think somebody like Netanyahu is cornered, and somebody also like Iran is cornered, right? Because they can't not respond to this. And so, you know, I just think it's like a moment where there needs to be a different narrative. I'm just so angry that there's not a different narrative that isn't about escalation right now. But it's like, who doesn't benefit from escalation right now? So what I hope is that this horrible crime leads to de-escalation. That's my hope. Mm-hmm. But I also am not super optimistic that that's going to happen. And of course, I agree about food. And I mean, if anybody should know that, it's Israel that, you know, but I guess the other part of this, of course, is there are still the hostages and trying to save their lives and get them out. And what are the weapons to turn people on Hamas, but all this thing. But I mean, it's more than I can talk about.
No, I know. And we will absolutely, you know, pick up and continue this conversation next week. But I thought that it was important to just get your perspective because of the work that you have done in the region for so long. Because I wonder, you know, you and I often over the years have talked about quote unquote tipping point moments. When is said mass shooting going to be the tipping point of changing the narrative? Is this going to be, you know, I just feel like we're always waiting or on the edge of a tipping point, that we don't necessarily ever see. to its fruition. So I was curious to your thoughts.
Well, again, Netanyahu is like Trump in a certain kind of way. Like, he's going to do the thing that's going to save his political life in a certain kind of way. But we'll see, because I'll just tell you, unless things really blow up, I'm going to be going back to the region in July, because I've been doing all this Israel-Palestine gun violence prevention work over the years. And they've invited me to come back in July. And I think I'm going to go back and see what I can find out myself. So we'll see what happens. But, I'll be reporting from on the ground, if that's possible. As you know, I've been doing work with a group of Israeli and Palestinian doctors, and also a feminist, Israeli-Palestinian feminist group that have been doing a lot of work on trying to, talk about a thankless job. Their point is to get all the guns out of Israeli occupied territories. That's what they've been doing. There are people on the ground there who do like incredibly brave work. So I want to go support them if I can, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will leave it there today, Jonathan. It is great to have you back and be in conversation as you continue your book tour. Really appreciate you.
Hang in there, everybody.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF. As always, power to the people and to all the people power. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.